What's good, everyone? It's WMUC FM, College Park, Sefresh Radio Piece, a counterbalance to the fair and balanced. And it's about 8 o'clock, and we're getting into our second hour. And that means we're getting into our fresh piece. And for our fresh piece today, we've got a special treat. We've got Garrett Reppenhagen. We've got Diego. We've got Diane Wilson. And we've got great stories from each of them. And the first one to come is Garrett. He was a sniper in Iraq. And before he returned from his tour of duty, he started feeling, dissenting views towards the war. And he started getting open to different possibilities. The internet, which we were talking about earlier with Hannah, was a great tool for him to connect with others that he felt, were taking similar views. We're not exactly pro-war, but we're starting to feel dissenting views. And so he's going to tell you about a story right now, and then we're going to get into Diego and Diane. All right.
Yourself. My name's Garrett Reppenhagen. I was a sniper in the 1st Infantry Division, deployed in Iraq, Bakuba, Iraq, from 2004 to 2005. I operated in Bakuba in the Diyala province, which is about 35 miles northeast of Baghdad. I did 80-plus missions, sniper missions, in the town of Hibhib, where Zakawi was killed. I've been out since Valentine's Day of last year. I've been back home since probably July of 2004 or 2005. And I'm now a board member of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
All right, so could you talk about your experiences there and what led you to, when you returned, joining Iraq Veterans Against the War, becoming a board member, getting involved in the movement?
Well, I started speaking out against the war before I left it. It was about midway through, and I started blogging. It all started when I met a band called the Bouncing Souls, a punk band in Schweinfurt, Germany, about a month before I deployed. And I made pretty good friends with them. We exchanged emails, and I started emailing them from the war. And Brian, the bassist, asked if he could post my emails to them on their band's website. And they did, and it was called Iraq Letter, or Letters from Iraq. And after about three or four letters being posted on their internet, I started receiving mail back, basically some feedback from those letters, and all of a sudden realized that I wasn't alone, isolated in Iraq, that I could literally be in the combat zone fighting like through an ambush, and 15 minutes later be back on the computer telling the world about what happened, and it was a tremendous amount of power. Also, you know, being in the combat zone, it wasn't what I was told I was there for. Weapons of mass destruction ended up being a joke. You know, I was doing a 21-gun salute for some of my buddies that died, who honestly believed they were there looking for weapons of mass destruction. The same day, George Bush was making a joke of it, looking around his Oval Office for weapons of mass destruction. And the betrayal and the lies, I felt very deep, you know. It hurt, you know. And I felt that I was taken advantage of and that I was abused as a soldier, as a tool, a weapon of this democracy to be manipulated and used falsely and irresponsibly. I thought it was a great injustice, and I basically started speaking out about the war and about the innocent deaths that were occurring all around me, about the life of a soldier in Iraq. And basically, I felt alone. You know, there's no real penetration of the peace movement to the soldiers in Iraq. They're not aware that it's going on. So anybody that feels any amount of dissent does it alone. And later on, I found out about the Iraq Veterans Against the War forming. And by the time I came home in July, I hit the ground running. They invited me out to Crawford, Texas, well, to Dallas, for the Veterans for Peace National Convention that was in Dallas. And I met Cindy Sheehan there. At that time, nobody knew her last name. We just knew her as Cindy. And at the cafeteria there, she basically discussed an idea of going out to Crawford, Texas, and meeting George Bush because he was on vacation. And we had to get out the maps and figure out where Crawford was and how we were going to get there. Basically, we made a two-hour trip in a biodiesel bus to Crawford to encounter George Bush. And, you know, I was one of the first ones to build Camp Casey. I pitched Cindy Sheehan's tent, you know, at Crawford, Texas that first day. And when I was leaving Dallas the next day to go back home, you know, I saw Cindy Sheehan on CNN in the airport monitors at Dallas-Fort Worth. And, you know, I realized that there was finally some sort of traction, that the peace movement was gathering, and that the world views in the national views of the war was changing. And I think as you can tell in the last year, we've gone from 70% support of George Bush in this war to only 30%, which is a huge shift. And, you know, it really makes me feel like we're making a difference, you know, as far as veterans coming back and speaking against the war that they fought, you know, that they fought in, and the actual, you know, people, whether it goes from opinion to action, at least the popular support of the war has fallen. And Iraq Veterans Against the War have quadrupled in membership in the last year. So this time next year, we'll have over 1,000 soldiers, veterans, marching the streets against this war if we continue on this route. So that's going to be an awesome, awesome thing to see.
Can I ask what your opinions were of today?
Of the events today?
Yeah, what do you think of what was going on today? How do you feel about it?
I feel that it's incredibly hot, and to ask people to sacrifice the fast is a huge commitment. I'm really surprised that we have so many people out here dedicated to do this kind of event in the heat on a 4th of July, an Independence Day, which is nationally known now as a day to celebrate and be with friends and eat a lot of food and drink a lot of drink. And instead, people are sacrificing their time to come down here and actually protest and actually have their voices heard. I think that's powerful and amazing.
What do you think of the response they've gotten? It seems to be very positive. How do you feel about that?
That's great, man. I don't think the response would have been the same a year ago, and it's just because we've done events over and over like this that has allowed it to be more acceptable in today's environment to speak about the war in such a manner and not support the war but still support the troops is finally registering in people's minds.
I guess I just wanted to say, if you had maybe a message for, you know, maybe the troops who are over there now trying to deal with, you know, I guess some of the moral conflicts over there, what would you say to them?
Well, it's hard because there's never any right option. You're dealing with a lot of these soldiers are married. A lot of these soldiers don't have much of a choice. They don't want to go back to the ghettos. They still want their college education. They still have a sense of duty, you know, and they still have families to feed and to support. And it's a hard decision to resist. But if they choose to resist, there's plenty of people that will respect that decision and will support them in any way possible. So it's a difficult situation, and it's a lose-lose in a lot of cases. So people have to make those choices individually, and I respect either one they make, whether they stay or whether they want to join us.
One last question is, how do you feel about the diversity of today's protest?
The diversity?
Yeah.
I think it's a necessity to have people from all walks of life, all classes, you know, all races, all genders, you know, all sexual preferences to be joined to one, to make it obvious that it's not an isolated group of people that are against the war, but all walks of life coming together to support peace.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to conclude maybe by just saying how people could get involved with Iraq Veterans for War and what they can do to support the troops?
Yeah, I mean, we have a website, iraqveteransagainstthewar.net, and you can go there and keep up to date on what the Iraq Veterans Against the War are doing, and how to donate, or how to purchase merchandise, which always helps. And also just, you know, donate time. Come out to the streets. When you hear us talking, come out and hear us. Invite us into your schools, into your churches to speak, so you know the point of view of the actual soldiers that have fought the war.
Sorry, I lied. One more. Could you just say your name and spell it for me?
Garrett Reppenhagen. GarrettReppenhagen.
And where are you from?
I'm from Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. All right. Thank you very much, Garrett.
Cool.
Hey, if you want to keep in contact.
Yeah, and that was Garrett Reppenhagen, an Iraq vet against the war. And you can look up more about them, get involved, IVAW.org, I believe, for Iraq Vets Against the War. Garrett was a great guy. He had a good story. I think we were talking about getting more of an in-depth interview, because guy definitely has gone through a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll see him around today. We're definitely going back down to D.C. to check out the fasting going on by Lafayette Park, and I think it's going to be... He should be around, he said, possibly. You guys should come check it out. It's going to be crazy people.
Yeah, they're meeting at 10.
Of people.
So if you can, get there by 10. So you'll make it, because everyone's congregating, and then they're moving on to their own little events. So I think Diego's supposed to call in pretty soon. He hasn't yet, so we're going to play a little tune for you. James, you had a little machete or idiotech, or, you know, I know you had a little beat you wanted to pull. But, yeah, check us out, thatfreshradiopiece.com, a counterbalance to the fair and balance. And it seems we've got Diego on the line. So, what's up, man? How you been?
Chilling.
Yeah, so you were telling me the other day that Venceremos Brigade, which we had a guest earlier, what was her name again?
Bonnie Massey.
Yeah, she had talked about, discussed it for the Hands Off Venezuela and Cuba rally down in D.C. So now you're calling in today to talk about a special event with the brigade.
Well, yeah. That what she was on for last time was for a rally in D.C. What I'm on for is on Saturday, this past Saturday, about 50, 60 members of the Venceremos Brigade, they left from New York City, and they traveled to Canada, and from there to Cuba in the 37th contingent of the Venceremos Brigade, which has been sending people every year to Cuba since 1969 as a means of expressing solidarity with Cuba, with what's going on in Cuba today, and as well as challenging U.S. foreign policy towards that country, and that entails the embargo, the all U.S. aggressions against Cuba and the Cuban Revolution, and we can see that today in the new Commission for a Free Report and their new report, which just came out a few days ago, which last report that came out, the one before this one, really just tightened the restrictions on travel to Cuba, which included restricting Cuban Americans from visiting their family, from sending money and aid to their family in Cuba. It limited who was acceptable as family according to the U.S. government. It was only very specific aunt, cousin, brother, anyone other than that would not be included in the family, and you wouldn't be able to go travel to Cuba if you had, let's say, a double cousin or, you know, your uncle's brother or something like that. But, that's what I'm calling in for. They left yesterday, and they're set to come back on the 17th. They're going to be coming back to Passage for Peace, so it's going to be over 100 people from the U.S. defying these travel restrictions and direct civil disobedience to them, and they'll be returning on the 17th. They're going to be coming back from Canada. We encourage anybody who wants to come up to the protest in Buffalo, where they're going to be crossing through customs, and they're going to be telling them that they went to Cuba, that they have a right to go to Cuba, and that they are not going to be intimidated by the customs officers or by the fines that the U.S. government can impose on Villaristas and people on the caravan, the Passage for Peace caravan. So, and also as well as any press coverage, because that's really, that's one of the most defining moments of the Vincent Amos Brigade trip to Cuba. The past 3 years we've been making a travel challenge, which is basically direct action, so a little more direct than the rally in D.C., more, you know, more in your face and more challenging of the actual policies that we denounce and that we go against and what we travel to Cuba to learn about. So, yeah.
So yeah, Diego, do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, what Vincent Amos Brigade does when they get down to Cuba, you know, your experience, that type of deal?
Yeah, definitely. Well, what we do is we try to give the opportunity for people to go down to Cuba and see what it's really like down there, because what we see is there's a huge campaign of misinformation going on this Cuba in terms of the reality of Cuba. We see this last week in Miami where everybody's talking about freedom and democracy in Cuba. They banned a book in Miami, in the Miami school system, in the library, because they said it didn't portray Cuban life as negative. And there's been a whole struggle with the ACLU against the school system there to not censor and not eliminate this book. So that's basically what the brigade is trying to do. They're trying to give opportunity for people to go and see firsthand the realities of Cuba. And so while we're there, we do volunteer work, agricultural work. Like when I went a few years ago, we helped out in nationwide campaign to renovate the school systems there. So we helped out in the Santiago school. They were rebuilding it during their summer. And then we try to meet with all different types of groups. In the past, we've met with veterans of the wars in Cuba. So people who have, like, fought with Che in Bolivia, people who have been involved in, like, the original Cuban Revolution being brought into power, people who were involved in Cuba's mission or aid against apartheid in Africa. We've met with the Federation of Cuban Women, the Young Communist League there, the family of the Cuban Five, which are five Cuban political prisoners in the United States, anti-terrorist prisoners who have been in U.S. cells for the past 7-8 years, young people there, people in the National Assembly, people doing HIV/AIDS preventive work over there. And yeah, we meet, and the thing about the brigade is that you're always interacting with Cuba, and it's about bringing that exchange culturally, politically, socially, and really just expressing our solidarity with Cuba and saying that we're not standing for these. It's basically not in our name. The embargo, the imperialist aggressions the United States has been responsible for against the Cuban people, there's people in the U.S. who aren't standing for that, and we're taking action against this.
And so
that's a little bit of what we do when we're in Cuba.
All right, well, thank you, Diego. Unfortunately, we're out of time if we're going to keep up with everything, but thanks for calling in, and let us know how everything goes when they return.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So, all right, man, we'll take it easy. Have a good day.
Mission is ready.
Peace.
And so that was Diego, our good buddy, our faithful co-host. And he was talking about Vincent Amos Brigade. They go to Cuba, through Mexico and Canada. There's pastors and ordinary citizens. So you can look them up on the internet. But now we're going to get into Diane Wilson.
Yeah, this interview is awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely awesome. She's quite a lady. I've heard things, you know, like, oh, have you interviewed Diane Wilson? Or, like, there she is. And I'm just like, all right, I mean, I'm not too familiar, but okay. And then, you know, a buddy of ours introduced us, and it was definitely worthwhile many times over, and I think you will enjoy that. So here we go.
All right. So briefly introduce yourself.
Let's see, Diane Wilson. I'm a fourth generation shrimper from Seadrift, Texas. I've been working on shrimp boats since I was 8 years old, and I've was captain of my own shrimp boat, and had a 42-foot shrimp boat. And in 1989, our county, it's a little county on Texas Gulf Coast, we were the number one county in the nation for toxic disposal. And so I just called a meeting, you know. I was just a fisherwoman, and I had 5 kids. I got a son that's autistic, and we've got all these chemical plants. And like I said, we were number one in the nation. And that information kind of like blew my mind. And it's like, I think in everybody's life, there's times that you receive information, and if you don't do something with it, it changes who you are or who you'll ever become. Because I did something with that information I never did before, because I don't like talking. You know, I made a good shrimper because I like being out on a boat. You know, I like being by myself on a bay. And so for me to call a meeting about those environmental issues was something I had never did before. And it was probably the most significant thing I ever did, because from then on, you know, I've been involved in the environmental movement now for 18 years. I did 7 hunger strikes. I took my own shrimp boat out and sunk it on top of a discharge pipe. I have climbed chemical towers, chained myself. In fact, I just recently got out of, I was in county jail for 3 months, and the district attorney said I was the most dangerous woman in the state of Texas. I was dangerous woman. And so I've been fighting environmental battles on the Texas Gulf Coast. I've been trying to get corporations, and that's what they are, these big corporations, and they put all of their wastewater, I mean millions of gallons a day, into a bay when you got about 6 chemical plants, and they're all putting like 5 or 6 million gallons a day. I mean, you get a bay that gets saturated. And we had a couple of years ago, we had all the dolphins in the bay. They died. They were just littered. You'd look out on the bay and you'd see this smear out in the bay, and you'd get close, and it was all these like 300-pound dolphins, and they were dying, and like the alligators were just rolling in the bay, and like some of the fishermen, because shrimping got so bad, it got real, real bad. So I was running this fish house, and I would have some of these fishermen, they said they could just walk right up and scoop the fish out of the water, because they were just kind of swirling and right on the top of the surface. And so what I've been fighting for is to get these chemical plants to recycle their wastewater. And the 1972 Clean Water Act, you know what it said? Zero discharge. That's what it said. It was, I mean, they you know, it was brought out of Congress. There would be zero emissions by 1985. And corporate lawyers took that Clean Water Act goal, and is just, and now it's like, how much can a bay tolerate, you know? And so what I've mainly been fighting for is to get these chemical plants to go back to the original goal of the Clean Water Act, is zero discharge. And so I just started demanding it. And they just said I was the craziest thing they'd ever heard of. They had never heard of zero discharge. And like, where did I get that idea? And the thing that is You know, you start saying zero discharge, and they start saying, never heard of it, never heard of it. And then pretty soon is, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. But, you know, after three hunger strikes and a boat sinking, I got zero discharge out of that corporation. It took a lot getting there, you know, and some of my hunger strikes were, I think the longest was 31 days. And it was a water only, you know. I believe you have to, you know, this is your home. This is your home, and they will take it. You know, especially like in Texas, it's like, I mean, if a corporation violates the law, it's like they report themselves. Nobody else reports it, you know. And so you have all of these fish kills. You have all these algaes. You have all these dolphins dying. We got the largest mercury underwater Superfund site in the nation. And you know, my son's autistic, and I don't know if you know anything about mercury, but they say for every 100,000 pounds of mercury that goes into the air, the autism rate rises 17%. And this chemical company emitted over a million pounds of mercury. That's how much they dumped. And I mean, it wasn't me just saying that. It's like we got their own internal documents, because you know, these corporations won't admit anything. You have to, you know, I got friendly with workers, you know, you find about lawyers who get friendly. And so I started uncovering all of this stuff. And, you know, I had helicopters landing in my yard, shooting at the house, killing my dog. They tried to sabotage my boat twice. I mean, it gets crazy. I guarantee you, when you start threatening their profit, they get really peculiar, you know, and especially when you got the senators, when you got the elected officials, when they all got contracts with the company. You know, it's no different than what's going on with Cheney and Halliburton. You know, you talk to Cheney, you and ask him about, you know, what about your connection with Halliburton? He's like, oh, you know, that was a long time ago, and I just received a little bit of money. But recently, I snuck into a fundraiser, Tom DeLay and Cheney. It was a big fundraiser, and Tom DeLay was being indicted, so he was really hip on raising funds for his reelection campaign. And so Cheney was going to come down, and they were going to have this little fundraiser and raise money, and you know, and to rub shoulders with Cheney, it's going to take $5,000 to get a ticket, and to like get a picture taken with him, it was going to be like $2,000. And to get a ticket in the front door, it was going to be $500. And I just kind of called up and said, I pretended I was this dead Republican woman. And I just said, I just love Tom DeLay, and I just really wanted to see him. And, you know, I really didn't have any money. And so they said, oh, just come on, you don't, $50. So I wrote a check for $50, and I got into this Republican fundraiser. They didn't even check my IDs. I mean, I was that close to Cheney. Nobody checked my ID. I just walked right in. And but the funny thing is about, they didn't allow any media into that room. All it was these really rich Republicans with these fancy clothes and fancy suits. And there was Tom DeLay and all these Republicans and Cheney. And I remember when it came time for Cheney to get up there and speak, someone said, well, you're in Halliburton country, and he was going, rah, rah, Halliburton, Halliburton, rah, 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 you know, and it's like, this is what really goes on, you know, and the stuff they tell us, the lies they tell us, and, you know, and then they expect us to just, you know, yeah, you know, and you know, regarding this war, it's like, the people do not want this war. They do not believe it anymore. They want the troops home. The Iraqis don't want it. And you have all of our elected officials still voting to give them funds. You know? And so, you know, I just believe in the power of the people. This is we the people. It's not we the Congress. We the President. You know, and I think we are making a grave mistake when we start expecting our elected officials to be the one to lead this country right. I think it is our duty as citizens. I really do. And I think the country is in such a crisis. I really do. I've never felt so afraid for this country, and I'm not scared of the terrorists. I'm afraid of where this country's going. And I think, and that's why I'm doing this water hunger fast, and I intend to take it.
And that is Diane Wilson, former shrimper, or she's still a shrimper, and she's now fasting with many other people, thousands of people actually, all over the country, all over the world. And this is her with an interview we did yesterday down at Lafayette Park. You should go down there today. And here's Diane Wilson again.
Very, very far. Furthest I've ever taken anything. You know, I really, matter of fact, I made my will out. That's how serious I'm taking it. And the thing that is that you have to be that serious, though. You know, I don't know whether y'all probably a little too young for Daniel Berrigan. You ever heard about Daniel Berrigan? They were two priests, brothers, Daniel and Philip Berrigan brothers, and they were opposing the Vietnam War, and they were like, they're famous for getting over nuclear weapon sites, impounding the weapons with a hammer or spilling their blood on it. And I mean, they got jailed big time, really. I mean, they took like 2 or 3 years, they were jailed. And I remember a statement that Daniel Berrigan said, and he said, there's no peace because there's no peacemakers. Because a peacemaker is willing to go as far as those who are willing to wage war, you know, and that's, you know, that disrupts your life. You risk jail, you risk dishonor, and sometimes you risk death. You know, and most people, I think this country is very afraid to talk about death. You know, they're just, matter of fact, the reporters, the minute they find me going on a water only, as long as it lasts, I mean, the first thing they say is, are you going to die? You know, and I was like, has anybody went and asked a single one of those kids, you know, 18, 19-year-old kid, you know, what do you feel about, you know, what do you feel about dying? They don't do that. And so, you know, they get real uptight about me, you know, and it's like, this is my choice. This is my choice. And these are 17, 18-year-old kids, you know, they believe, half of them believe the myth, and until they get over there and then they see what's really going on. And so, anyway.
So now you've played a big part in Code Pink.
Yes.
Its formation, things it's done. Could you talk a little bit about the history leading up to this fast?
Okay, well, Code Pink started as I was, like I said, I've been a long-time environmental activist. I've been a fisherman, but I've always also been an environmental activist. And in, let's see, about 2002, I gave a speech at the Bioneers in California. Y'all ever heard of that, the Bioneers? Anyway, it's this big, huge, it's like 5,000 people, and it's cutting-edge eco solutions, you know, like some of them are even Nobel candidates. Some of them are so far out there, and they're scientists, and they're very educated people. And I was one of the only grassroots, regular, working-class people that was there, and I was talking about, you know, my campaign with the chemical companies down there. And at the end of the speech, I misquoted George Bernard Shaw, and I said, a reasonable woman adapts to the world, and an unreasonable woman makes the world adapt to her. And the women went nuts. They were just stomping and clapping, and they just went nuts. And they, and you know, and I was there, the Bioneers conference was about 3 or 4 days, and all that week I had these women, I mean, a lot of them were almost crying. It was like giving them permission to misbehave and to get rowdy, to put yourself out there. And and so there was such a seemed to be this real need for it that we one of the founders of Bioneers, they got funding and pulled together 35 of the most radical women in the United States. And that group of women, we met in this little canyon in California, and matter of fact, Medea was there, Jody was there. It was all these women from all different, you know, some were in civil rights, some people were with immigration, you know, with, you name it. I think I was about the only one from the South, though, in the environmentalists. And actually, one of the first things we did, because we were going to figure out, is what would it be like to be an unreasonable woman for the earth? You know, what would it take? What would you be like? What would you do? And so we were there about 4 days talking about being an unreasonable woman. And one of our first actions after that is I went on a hunger strike in front of a Union Carbide plant in Texas. And in Code Pink, it was before we called ourselves Code Pink, but it was those women that are now Code Pink. They came and they sit down in that truck with me, because I was in the back of my truck in front of this Union Carbide plant for like 30 days. And that was one of the most successful hunger strikes, because it was supporting the Bhopal people. And over 1,000 people joined it, 8 different countries. And the end result was the Indian government had been going to like drop the charges against Union Carbide because of Bhopal. And when we did that hunger fast, they reinstated the charges and sent out a warrant for Warren Anderson, who was the CEO for... Do y'all know about Bhopal?
Yeah,
it's the worst environmental disaster ever. You know, I think at this point over 20,000 people died. And it's Union Carbide had a pesticide leak and all these people died. And anyway, so that's what that hunger strike was. And so it was about 3 months after that, we were in this group of people, and they said, well, what are y'all going to do about the war? And we said, we're going to do a hunger strike right in front of the White House. And so we did. We did a 4-month vigil in the dead of winter right here, right before the war started. And that's where Code Pink, that was our first anti-war action. And we called ourselves Code Pink because they were doing Code Orange, Code Red, and we said, well, we're going to call ourselves Code Pink and get women to rise up. And, you know, and we didn't even like pink, quite frankly. There was a lot of women that was like, I don't wear pink. I don't like pink. And that was one of our first actions, and we have been in ever since. We went to Iraq right before the war started, and we have been kicked out of Republican conventions, Democratic conventions. We've been kicked out of inaugurations. We interrupted Rumsfeld. You name it. We've been over the fence. I was banned from Washington, D.C., you know. Told me if they saw my face in here, they'd arrest me on the spot. So anyway, that's where Code Pink comes from. It's very organic. It's very, you know, whoever wants to do it from wherever they call, you know. I want to do something like Code Pink, and it's like, okay, you're it. You name it, you're it. And it's very organic, very spontaneous, and it's very fun. We do some pretty outrageous. I remember one of the first actions when we were here that first year at the vigil, the 4-month vigil, and this was right before I got arrested, thank God, because I don't know if I could have done it. They went on the steps of the Capitol and did a striptease.
I heard about that, yeah.
He did. Yeah. They did. And it was like, read my kits. No war in Iraq. And they had little pasties. Yeah, they're pretty outrageous. They pretty are. Anyway, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. All right, I guess if you, maybe you have a message you want to throw out to all the people who are fasting and keep them going, you know. I know it's going to be a lot of like lonely days about eating, possibly, and I don't know if you had anything to say to them, possibly.
Well, yeah, I just think it's a far better thing that we put our lives on the line than that our children or that our future children have to put their lives on the line for this war. And I think it's far better that we put our lives on the line than that the children of Iraq put theirs on the line. So we just have to remember that.
Could you briefly also just go over the logistics of this? I know you guys are going to be here for roughly a month and heading to Crawford.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, could you go over the details of this True Tone Fast?
Okay, the fast will start tonight at midnight. I guess officially July 4th, the first minute into July 4th. And some people are, there's some long-term fasters, and some of them are doing a juice fast, and I'm doing a water-only fast. And then there's ones that are going to be only doing 24 hours and kind of a rolling fast, and they're doing fast all over the country. I think at this point we've got over 3,000 people, 18 different countries. And see, this is pretty amazing because I've done hunger strikes before, and I have never, ever been in a strike where you got this much momentum before you even begin the strike. So, and I do, I have got this feeling about this. This is going to be, as they say, you know, I don't think that's an easy word we're saying. I think it's going to be a historical strike. I think it's going to create the space to bring the troops home. And so we're going to be here until August 14th, and then George Bush goes to Crawford, Texas, and we're going to take the hunger strike to Crawford, Texas. And I don't know, y'all ever been to Crawford, Texas?
No,
you gotta come because it's in a pasture and there's cows, and you look across the pasture and you can see George Bush's his ranch, and you can see the tops of his barns, and you can see the roadblocks. The Secret Service got the roadblocks, and it's real entertaining, you know. I'm going to the little town of Crawford, Texas, and they got the Yellow Roads of Texas little shop, and even regularly they bring out on a hay trailer, they bring out the Ten Commandments in stone. Yeah, they drag. Yeah, that's the Yellow Rose of Texas. But anyway, so we're going to be there until September, and then we're coming back to Washington, D.C., and if they haven't started putting out a timeline for the troops home vest, we're declaring a nationwide civil disobedience.
That's mass December 21st.
Yes, okay. It's supposed to be. Yes, that's the Declaration of Peace, and I think it's also International Peace Day.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be every day. We're going to be sitting and planning on things that we can do. We're going to be going, I'm sure, going to our representative's office, doing, you know, making it pretty clear, whatever we need to. We're not playing games with this one. No more. Games are over with.
That was wonderful.
College Park. This is WMUC FM College Park, Safresh Radio piece, a counterbalance to the Fair and Balanced. And so we just had Diane Wilson, and then a little PSA, and then a song right there, Johnny Clegg's De La. Now we got a little David Bowie. So come check out the station sometime. As we were saying earlier, you can look them up on MySpace, LiveJournal, and Facebook, and check out Live Music at Third Rail Radio, Sunday, 6 to 9 p.m. Check it out. Go to WMUCradio.com if you want more info on the station and everything pertinent to that. So I think now James and I are going to bring you some community plugs to get involved with.
Yeah, guys. This is going to go on every day starting today. Troops home fast. We've been talking about it a lot today. But yeah, you should go down there. Peak hours are between 12 noon and 2 p.m. and 5 to 7 p.m. They're going to have fasting, workshops, music, teaching, speakers, organized by Code Pink. Come out, join Cindy Sheehan, Dick Gregory, veterans, mothers, and hundreds more as they launch a hunger strike in D.C. to call for troops to come home from Iraq. While many Americans will be expressing their patriotism on Independence Day via barbecues and fireworks, we'll be fasting in memory of the dead and wounded and calling for independence from war and for our nation to be the democracy it was created to be, not an empire. Check out that troopshomefast.org. And yeah, we're definitely going to be down there, and you should definitely come out. It's going to be awesome. Starting in about 5 minutes, go to March for DC Voting Rights. Join DC Vote Staff today at 9 a.m. Supporters and volunteers needed as DC Vote marches in the Palisades and 8th Street parades. DC Vote appeared for the 7th year at the Palisades 4th of July parade. Line up for the parade beginning at 10:15 at the intersection of Whitehaven Parkway and MacArthur Boulevard in the northwest. The parade will begin at 11 a.m. and proceed north up MacArthur Boulevard to the Palisades Park. And be sure to wear your DC Vote Taxation Without Representation t-shirts. And they provide t-shirts for new volunteers. And show your support. Contact LMIMS at dcvote.org or visit dcvote.org. And yeah, that's starting very soon. Today, later at like 11 o'clock. But Thursday, from 6:30 to 11 p.m. at Alpha Shawi's Cafe at 4132 Georgia Avenue in Northwest D.C. Take the Petworth Metro stop. This is the Power of the Drum. They'll have music, songs, spoken word, African food, vendors, and more. DCRadioCoop.org to check this out, and you definitely should. Me and Christian are starting to do a little work to make Alpha Shawi's Cafe perhaps more of a community center for activists and just everybody to come down and have a good time. It's gonna be awesome. That's Thursday all day, 6:30 to 11 p.m. No, actually 6:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. And yeah, also on Thursday, we have the Africa Action will be hosting a summer film series focused on HIV and AIDS in Africa. Films will be shown every other Thursday, followed by a speaker. The series will take place around D.C. and is completely free. It's an opportunity to watch critical films and hear from speakers who are leading the fight against HIV/AIDS. And that's Thursday, 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at 1225 Otis Street in the Northeast. Take the Red Line to the Brooklyn stop. And Christian should come back with some more headlines, more community plugs. Get you guys finished up.
Yo, what's going on, everyone? And it seems like Mr. Bowie is winding down. So it looks like we're going to have to end off with, oh, that special tune we all have come to love. It is the Revolutionary Team. And as we wind down the show, let me say really fast that there is a critical mass right this Friday, 6 p.m. DuPont Circle. Get out there. Why? Because riding your bike is healthier, sustainable, and builds better communities. And is lots of fun. And we'll be out there too, probably. Also Saturday at Alpha Shawi's Cafe, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is a community forum called Creating Change in Our Public Schools. This is about D.C. public schools. It's going to feature music, poetry, role-playing, action groups. We're going to talk about race, rights, equality, arts and music education, civics education, vocational ed, disposal of public school properties, privatization. Check it out, as we said earlier. It's three blocks north of the Petworth Metro stop. And you can check out more info on the D.C. Indie Media website. Also, July 9th, Sunday, from 12 to 12, noon to midnight. Check this out. We've had a little involvement in this. This is also going to be at the cafe. Reclaim Our Fate, Climate, Energy, and Global Justice, a teach-in, spokes council, and concert. It's free. There's going to be a lot of great stuff going on, good food, great people speaking, issues that we need to bring more attention to and to act more upon. From climate science, the Mountain Justice Movement, to oil and empire, bombs and poverty, global justice. So come on out, go to www.rtc.revolt.org. Again, www.rtc.revolt.org. And after the teaching, might I add, from 6 to midnight, $5 vegetarian dinner and drink. We're going to have a little benefit concert, spokes council. We're going to talk about the upcoming week of resistance, the G8 summit. Check out the G8 summit. We'll be reporting more on that in the coming weeks. Y'all take care.